Some early experiments in behavioral science, a bird's eye view. This is based on actual historical events, as some of you will tumble to ere long. At long last, the prayers of this humble rock dove have been answered. Electric typewriters have come on the scene, which means I can employ my hunting and pecking skills to tell the whole story of my brave lab mates, Burris Frederick Skinner, and our collaborative effort to cripple the German Navy during the Second World War. Rest assured that I intend to give B.F. Skinner, Dean of Behaviorists, all the credit he deserves. Though you won't find herein much enthusiasm for his argument that the mind of any given pigeon, myself for XX example, is merely an epiphenomenon of its body. I apologize for the above typo. The XXX key on this machine is sticky. By the time my tale has ended, I hope to have convinced you that every member of my species enjoys an inner life and aspires to the condition called dignity. I needn't remind you that over the centuries, your earthbound race has sustained three major blows to its self-esteem. First, Nicholas Copernicus dislodged you from the center of the universe. Then Charles Darwin demolished your myth of special creation. And soon thereafter, Sigmund Freud dashed your hopes of ever knowing yourselves in full. Now circumstances compel me to heap a fourth humiliation on your head. It concerns the natural ability of pigeons to communicate telepathically with humans. To be perfectly frank, every time we read your thoughts, we become bored to tears. Evidently, my species has little to learn from an animal that cannot travel at 38 miles per hour under its own power, navigate by a planet's magnetic field, or spread its wings and fly. I don't mean to give offense. That's simply the way it is. Call me Reuben. Hatched on April the 17th, 1938, I came of age in Professor Skinner's laboratory, back when he was teaching college students and experimenting with allegedly lower animals at the University of Minnesota. I'll drop this X stuttering for the rest of the story. At first, my generation was happy to let Skinner believe that a rock dove is essentially a black box with feathers. As long as he kept the rewards coming, the popcorn, the coconut flakes, the rice checks, we gave him ostensible sovereignty over our psyches, allowing him to train us to play ping pong, knock over tiny bowling pins with marbles, and engage in other inane activities. But then Hitler invaded Poland, and kibble became the least of our concerns. I'm going to skip a scene celebrating the patriotism of pigeons, including Cher Ami, the great hero of, heroine, really, of the Great War. Not long after the Nazis went on the march, a consensus emerged within the community of Skinner's winged experimental subjects. We would devise a scheme for thwarting the Third Reich and then, breaking our vow of silence, solicit the great psychologist's aid in implementing it. This plan, we agreed, should go far beyond the usual employment of pigeons as an organic telegraph system. Our beau geste, when it came, must be unprecedented and classy. Months passed. No strategy suggested itself. The Japanese attack was bringing America into the war, a catastrophic event, though one that would surely reinforce Skinner's patriotism and hence his sympathy for our cause. We passed the early days of 1942, letting Skinner believe he was conditioning us to peck out tunes on a xylophone, but our minds remained fixed on Hitler and the abominable things he was doing to the doves of Central Europe. I'm going to skip a scene that concerns another use of animals as weapons, having dogs carry mines to U-boats because they've been conditioned to do so. My lab mates and I later learned that Project Canine never got off the ground, largely because the president of 3M had a tender spot in his heart for dogs, but a spark had gone to flame in our collective avian imagination. The longer we mulled over the essentials of Peabody's brainstorm, lightweight missile, sentient navigation system, suicide mission, the more convinced we became that Hitler might be checkmated through an astute deployment of self-sacrificing pigeons. For a full month, we researched Der Führer's arsenal. By persuading the U.S. Navy that its most coveted enemy targets were vulnerable to bird-controlled bombs, we reasoned, Skinner would acquire the necessary funding in a trice. Eventually, we set our sights on the German fleet. Although the formidable Bismarck was now at the bottom of the North Atlantic, her sister battleship Tirpitz still roamed the seas preying on Allied shipping, and the heavy cruisers Gneisenau and Scharnhorst also remained at large. On the morning of his 41st birthday, after ascertaining that he was the only human in the lab, we entered into telepathic communication with Professor Skinner. He behaved exactly as one would expect of such an organism, stammering incoherently and dropping a tray of white mice. The container hit the floor, and the startled creatures scurried toward a familiar habitat, a rodent-scale maze in the far corner. Skinner flopped into his favorite lounge chair, stared at the ceiling, and moaned. Prematurely bald around the temples, he was a slender and agile man with a gracefulness not normally found outside the Columbidae family. I genuinely liked him, and not just because he occasionally rewarded us with euphoria-inducing cannabis seeds. "Am I losing my mind?" he asked the skylight. "Tut, tut, Doc, you know that the mind is nothing but a scientifically uninteresting phantom of the central nervous system," my little brother, Sasha, reminded him acerbically. "Give us a moment of your undivided attention," pleaded my comely cousin, Hannah. As the clan's official ambassador, I apprised the psychologist of our resolve to help secure an Allied victory. Somehow, Professor Skinner must convince the U.S. Navy to underwrite the development of pigeon-guided missiles intended to blow Kriegsmarine vessels out of the water. If our dream failed to become a reality, we'd never again be able to look ourselves in the mirror. "I can't believe I'm communing with pigeons." "There are more things in heaven and earth that are dreamt of in your psychology," I retorted. "I appreciate your anti-fascist sentiments, Mr. Pigeon." Reuben, but you see before you an extraordinarily busy man. I'm teaching 3 classes this semester, supervising a major rat experiment, and trying to be a good husband and father." "Gneisenau is out there, causing untold misery," my cousin Thomas proclaimed. "Also, Scharnhorst and Tirpitz." He pivoted toward me. "There's a gang of mites in my bib." Promptly, I removed the parasites from Thomas's throat feathers. Peck, 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 peck. "Thus far, the good guys in this war have failed to devise a single servo mechanism capable of delivering a payload to its target," noted my scrappy sister Elvira. "The U.S. Navy aims its torpedoes and hopes for the best. The RAF drops its bombs and prays for a lucky strike." "If the War Department needed the services of an experimental psychologist, I'd be the first to answer the call," Skinner asserted. Tugging on the ends of his bow tie, he rose defiantly from the lounge chair. "But I don't take orders from birds, even birds who've somehow conditioned themselves to engage in telepathic verbal behavior." "Let me put it this way, Doc," I declared. "You have many splendid achievements behind you and an even greater career ahead of you. Reward the right people, outwit your antagonists through negative reinforcement, and before long you'll be running the psych department at Harvard. Ah, but that happy outcome depends on your feathered friends keeping mum about their subjective selves." "You have enemies, Doc," my cousin Aaron reminded the boss. "And I don't mean the Nazis, I mean the cognitive psychologist. I'll wager Jean Piaget would be tickled to learn that pigeons worry about phenomenology. I think he'd love to enter into a post-war correspondence with B.F. Skinner's experimental subjects." "You're indulging in extortion," protested Skinner. "Conscious and deliberate extortion." "Didn't you read your own book?" I asked. "We have no free will in the matter. We're acting this way because similarly unscrupulous behavior on our parts was rewarded in the past." "Please think it over, whatever you do that the rest of the world calls thinking," suggested Thomas. "I'll think it over," said Skinner, sighing as he sank back into the chair. "Happy birthday, Doc," I said. So I'm going to skip to a scene in which they demonstrate the new weapon to some Navy brass. three of our pigeons are in the nose cone waiting the cue to, as it were, go on stage. This is happening in Washington, D.C. Although the nose cone muffled their voices, I could hear the Navy brass greeting Professor Skinner, who proceeded to explain the basics of the system. Operantly conditioned avian pilots, redundant pecking screens, pneumatic course correction valves. To pass the time, Sasha, Thomas, and I chatted telepathically. "Nuevas?" asked Thomas. "I feel like I'm walking on eggs," Sasha replied. Alas, the tension was getting to me as well. I sensed feathers loosening around my throat and along my left wing. "I hear the Army Air Corps plans to attach incendiary bombs to thousands of bats and release them over Japanese cities," said Sasha. "The bats will roost in the eaves and annex. Built-in timers will ignite the bombs, causing firestorms." "Clever idea, but I wish the poor mammals could consciously volunteer," I said. "Otherwise, it's murder." "Agreed," said Thomas. "I believe that bat-human rapport, like bat-pigeon rapport, will always be a distant dream," said Sasha. "Have you ever wondered what it's like to be a bat?" asked Thomas. "I've tried, but I can't wrap my mind around echolocation," Sasha replied. "Professor Skinner, I suggest we get on with the show," said some Navy big shot, probably the Admiral. "For purposes of this demonstration, you should imagine that a Douglas C-47 Skytrain is towing our Pelican glider to within striking distance of Tirpitz," said Skinner. "Admiral, perhaps you'd like to play the transport plane's pilot." "With pleasure," said Plantinga. "Commander Culkin, you'll be my navigator. Maintain present course." "Maintain present course," echoed Culkin. "Lieutenant Kresge, you're the bombardier," said Plantinga. "Aye, aye, sir," said Kresge. "Bad news, guys," said Sasha. "The tension's getting to my gizzard. I think I'm about to poop." "Oh, please," said Thomas. "I'm not in great shape either," I confessed. "I've lost some hackles and a few secondary ramages." "Same here," said Thomas. "Visual contact," cried Plantinga. Suddenly, the cutout of Tirpitz appeared on my view screen, her four pairs of 38-centimeter guns protruding from their turrets like arms extended in Sieg Heils. "You see that?" I asked my fellow pilots. "Target acquired," yelled Sasha, who'd apparently mastered his intestinal distress. "Lieutenant Kresge, drop bomber on the knot," ordered Plantinga. "Aye, aye, sir," said Kresge. Plantinga shouted, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. "The early board gets the kraut," I told my colleagues, resting my beak against the view screen. "We're with you, Reuben," Sasha and Thomas replied in unison. 3, 2, 1, release. "Missile flying," screamed Kresge. "Bomb under organic control," cried Skinner. Transcending our anxiety, Sasha, Thomas, and I thrust our beaks back and forth, pecking till hell wouldn't have it again. Tap, 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 tap. After 20 seconds, somebody tried making our task more difficult, jerking the battleship cutout first to the left, then to the right, then up, then down. I cleaved to my target, hammering with the steely determination of Poe's Raven. Tap, 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 tap. The valves whistled, madly releasing measured bursts of pressurized air. Tap, 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 tap. I could feel the nose cone banking, diving, and climbing as we faithfully tracked Tirpitz. "Amazing," cried Culkin. "This is better than radar," shouted Kresge. Plantinga yelled, "Lieutenant Bissonnet, move target closer." "Aye, aye, sir." Bissonnet did as instructed, simulating the Pelican's progress toward Tirpitz. Our mission had become ridiculously easy. Tap, 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 tap. Even a starling could hit a German battleship at this range. Tap, 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 tap. Now somebody got the bright idea of covering my camera obscura lens with his palm, making my view screen go black. "Fellas, I gotta drop out," I informed my colleagues, lifting my beak from the strike zone. "I've lost my target." "Lost mine too," moaned Thomas. "Sasha, it's up to you," I exhorted my little brother. "Come on the job," shouted Sasha. "Professor Skinner, I salute you," said Culkin. two servo mechanisms knocked out, but the missile remains on course. The mischief maker abruptly restored my tirpitz projection. Stimulus reacquired, I yelled. Tap, 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 tap. Stimulus reacquired, echoed Thomas. Now let's have a look at these hotshot pilots of yours, said Plantinga. Not yet, pleaded Skinner. The missile hasn't detonated. I haven't said kaboom. Ignoring the psychologist's protest, Plantinga opened the hatch of my cockpit. Ambient light flooded my view screen, washing out the projected image, and I found myself pecking at a maddeningly vague battleship. Tap, 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 tap. Pretty raggedy-ass bird you got there, Professor, said Plantinga. I'll bet he's shed a dozen hackles. Kaboom, shouted Skinner. This one's even mangier, said Culkin, evidently commenting on Thomas's condition. Kaboom, kaboom. This last one's in the worst shape of all, said Kresge. He's pooped all over the place. And then it happened. The most undesirable development imaginable, our presumed patrons stopped taking us seriously. Merriment gathered in the decorated breasts of Admiral Plantinga, Commander Culkin, Lieutenant Kresge, and Lieutenant Bissonnet. And they all burst out laughing. Pigeons, cackled Culkin with unrestrained glee. Pigeons, echoed Kresge. Of course they're pigeons, countered Skinner. That's what you paid for. A scruffy bunch of pooping pigeons, snickered Bissonnet. They delivered the bomb to the target, wailed Skinner. They sank tirpitz. They cracked in their cockpits, cried Culkin, guffawing. Radar guidance might not work, but it doesn't get the run, said Plantinga, howling hysterically. And from that moment on, it was clear to all of us, to Sasha and Thomas and me, and even to the great psychologist, that Project Organicon was history. So that's all I'll read for tonight.